Barnaby Smith, thanks so much for coming to WRTI.
Thank you very much for having me.
And you are the artistic director of Voces 8.
I am indeed.
Could you talk a little bit about how this ensemble was formed?
Sure. Originally, the eight members of the group who started the group almost 15 years ago were members of a youth choir in the UK. It was called the Millennium Youth Choir, part of the Royal School of Church Music. And we all got a little bit old for that choir. So my brother, Paul, and I decided that we'd start arranging sleepovers at our parents' house, just to have those friends over who we'd been singing with in the choir. And we'd have a party and probably do some singing as well. And we actually got invited to take part in a competition in Italy. I'm still not sure how we got invited. And so we went over there. It appeared, if I'm honest, a little bit like a free holiday. Trip to Venice for 10 days, all expenses paid. And when we arrived, we realised it was really quite serious. So we did some practice and were very fortunate to win that competition. And from that, we came to be offered so many concerts that the group was able to sort of commit our time to it. And here we are 15 years later.
That's great. What was that competition?
It was called the International Choral Grand Prix. Sounds very official, doesn't
it? Yes, it does. So when you decided to form and be official, what was your mission?
It's a good question. I think twofold, really. We wanted to be a great vocal group and give performances at the highest level. And we also wanted to give as much back as possible. We feel very fortunate for the opportunities we had when we were growing up. Many of us were choristers, got the opportunity to study at great schools. But we're also very aware that music struggles to find its place in the curriculum and in the lives of both young people and also our communities in general. So we were really keen to try and do something about that, tackle some of those issues. And so we also set up a foundation, which is called the VCM Foundation, based in London. And we're also now a 501c3 out here in the US as well.
The eight people who are in it now are not the same eight people who were in it to start?
No, I'm the only relic of that bygone era. my brother, Paul, is very much involved with us. He's the CEO of our organisation, and he's also the guy who leads a lot of our education and outreach programmes. But there's some very long-serving members in the group. Andrea's done 11 years now. But I would suggest that we change maybe a singer each season on average. So the turnover of the group is probably turns over mostly once every 8 years.
Well, despite your turnover of membership, the group seems to be very strong. This is your 13th album that you've just come out with. Congratulations.
Thank you for counting, because I'm not sure I knew that.
Enchanted Isle.
Yeah.
Now, as I look at some of your other albums, you've recorded everything from Bach and Brahms, Bruckner, Psalms, and then collections. This is a collection organized by theme.
Yeah, so this is, I suppose I would call it a concept album in the sense that we've taken a sound world and a particular genre or genres of music that we feel run together within a single concept, rather than perhaps a recital CD, which some of our other discs are, which combine a multitude of different styles and genres. So Enchanted Isle is specifically, I suppose, inspired by the vistas of the UK. And so within that, of course, we have folk melodies and that kind of material from the UK and different parts of the UK. But we also just have some works which we felt the sound world inspired those visions. So, for example, there's a track from the Game of Thrones. There's also Barber's Arnest Day, which, of course, has nothing to do with the UK, other than the fact that those wonderful arching phrases in the piece just reminded us of the rolling hills of our country. So.
Right. I guess every album kind of tells a story. What story does this tell about the Enchanted Isle? I guess there are two islands, but this is all of the UK.
This is all of the UK. So we've tried to find folk songs from different parts of the country. So we have Soe, which is a beautiful folk song, which has only recently been discovered on the Isle of St Kilda. And also The Parting Glass is another Scottish-inspired song. And then Doogie MacLean's Caledonia, which is a more modern take on the folk idiom. Doogie actually wrote it from the beaches of Normandy, looking back to his native Scotland. And it's very much been taken as a sort of unofficial national anthem of Scotland. And Blake, who is the first tenor in Voces 8, now lives in Edinburgh. And he says whenever he goes out in the evening, when it gets to closing time, he says, you can pretty much in every pub hear someone singing a rendition of Caledonia. And he loves it, so that particularly inspired him to arrange that piece.
Wow. Even if you don't know these places, if you're from the U.S. and you've never been to these places, the music really is very evocative of a certain place or mood. How would you describe that?
That's a good question. I mean, a lot of the music that we're singing has been specifically arranged for this album and for our voices as well. So I think one of the nice things about melody is it carries almost a DNA within it, doesn't it? You know, you can tell when something from the Russian symphonic school is written in that way just by its melodic structure, or similarly something like Bach, for example, or even Handel. And so I think within these folk songs, there is an element of the DNA of that particular place. The other thing that I love about doing these projects is that Decca, who is the record label, they commission a number of arrangers to come and write new versions of these pieces. And so they kind of get specifically sculpted to work with our eight voices, which is a real treat and means that we can put our own perspective on it as well.
So in your materials, you talk about how this is new arrangements of Scottish and Irish melodies, compositions set to text by great English poets, and music originally written for film or TV, reimagined to create sonorities reminiscent of watercolor landscapes or sculpture. Are you exploring different ways to make sounds?
Yes, a little bit. And part of our job as a cappella group is, of course, to make all of the noises with our mouths. There are some instruments on these particular tracks. I have this thing called synesthesia. So especially whenever I sing music, I see colour. And so it's very, very vivid for me when I sing in a particular key. So the key of E major is orange for me. The key of A flat major is green, all these kinds of things. And so I think I'm personally am very much tied to this idea of image and music. But as a group, we're always working to create new sounds to try and work. We have eight different voices in Voces 8. So although we spend a lot of our time trying to be one unit, we do have eight different singers. And you know, you talk about melody having DNA, but actually everybody's voice has a very individual DNA. So working with those ideas as well to try and create different colours and pictures is very important.
So when you talk about synesthesia, would you explain, when you say you see a colour, could you point to one of the pieces on the album and talk about your experience in singing it? And when you say you see it, do you mean if you close your eyes, you see it, or...?
Well, I have, when I sing, or really when I hear music as well, my brain becomes stimulated to an extent from the aural sense that it becomes overstimulated. And so in order to be able to deal with that, I actually often will close my eyes to reduce the amount of visual sense that I'm perceiving, my brain is perceiving at any time. So when I shut my eyes, I then see these specific colours. And it can cause me real difficulty when I'm standing on stage because I'm aware that sometimes I can spend a lot of time with my eyes closed. I mean, it's a bit different. You know, if I've got a solo and I'm delivering a solo, then my mind's in a slightly different place. But if I'm performing part of the accompaniment, for example, and maybe a soprano or a tenor's got the melody, then I'm really engaging with my listening in order to be an accompaniment. And that's when I begin to see these colours. So on this album, for example, I would say Danny Boy. Danny Boy fits for me because it's an Irish melody and I get a sort of very dark green colour to it, which for me fits the Irish Celtic idea. But then also the way the arrangement's scored, the melody goes into the sopranos, and when the sopranos start to sing, I actually get a little bit of orange. So then immediately it's actually depicting the Irish flag for me. And I know that sounds really stupid, but actually it means that I really enjoy singing it every time because it gives me such a clear vision and indication of where the music's from.
Now, you recorded this in studios at Abbey Road?
We recorded the majority of the album in a church in Cambridge.
Okay.
Did we do some at Abbey Road? I'm actually not sure on this disc if we did. We recorded with Jacob Collier, who's a famous great young jazz artist. And we recorded with him at Abbey Road, but I think on this particular disc, the recording is made in a church, and they're sort of the middle of rural Cambridgeshire. So a very nice place, thinking about those vistas. And then you can kind of peek out of one side of the church, you see fields, you peek out the other side of the church, you see like the spires of King's College Cambridge and John's College Cambridge in the distance, which is very, very nice.
So you were experiencing the visuals that
Absolutely.
This music is evoking.
Yeah. Absolutely, which was very nice.
Yeah, that's very cool. Why do you sing?
That's a good question. I mean, on a personal level, I find it a very good way of just of expressing myself, and I feel fortunate for that. And so the other reason that I do the job I do is to try and help offer other people the opportunity to experience exactly that. You know, I look back at my childhood and I think, well, a massive part of the reason I am how I am today is because of my singing, because I've had the ability to develop my own personality because of the freedom of expression that I've gained through my music making. So I'd love to offer that opportunity to other people. Some would say that they just like to listen to it, and that's absolutely fine. If they gain enjoyment from that, then great. But for me, it's all about inspiring people to be expressive and to be able to express themselves.
So beyond these recordings that you're doing, beyond your performances, you collaborate, you teach something called the Voces 8 method. What is that?
Well, that was actually developed by my brother, but it's a teaching resource that we now use everywhere we go. So coming back to this idea of music in the curriculum, I mean, we really struggle in the UK, as we do, I think, in many places around the world, just to try and find enough time in the school day for the creative arts amidst all of these necessities to hit stats on literacy and numeracy and all that kind of stuff. And so the Institute of Education in London did some research about how if children took part in a little bit of musical activity every day across the school year, how that had an impact on their results at the end of the year. And it didn't just look at that, it also looked at specific types of music making that they were being engaged with. It came up with some very interesting research about how the children who'd taken part in this pilot had increased levels of numeracy and linguistics. So we decided to take the results of the study and actually turn it into a curriculum or a resource, which is called the Voces 8 method. So it's specifically designed as a book for a teacher. And critically, it doesn't have to be a music teacher. So it could be a maths teacher, a science teacher. Any adult, we hope, could read this book and be able to learn to lead the musical facets within it. And it works a little bit like circle songs. So it's effectively layers of different types of music. They could be rhythms or melodies or harmonies. Across a school year, you learn 32 different patterns. And from those 32 different patterns, you can create any number of musical pieces. It also incorporates different styles of music. So you've got African patterns.
Could you explain what you mean by the pattern?
Yes. So for example,
you could sing too.
I'm not sure anyone needs that. Not mic this closely. If I said to you, say after me the numbers 1, 4, 7, and 8, and then I said, now let's clap those numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You can just repeat that pattern, and then against it you can put a different pattern. So we might have the drum pattern, which you can teach very, very quickly. And you start to layer up these different patterns. So if you put the numbers 3, 5, and 8 with the numbers 1, 4, 7, and 8, then you get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That is two patterns put together, which actually form the standard pattern from African music. You can then layer up. We can teach harmonies that go on top of that. And before you know it, you've created music. And it's a really nice way in for anybody who's not done music before. It's engaging for anybody from a four-year-old all the way through to a professional musician, because there are so many layers. You can teach them at a variety of different speeds. As you can see, all I've done is clap on certain numbers, so I don't need to be, in inverted commas, musical or a music teacher in order to be able to teach that. And we hope that the way it's using the brain, we know from the science that the way it's using the brain is what we call a cross-lateral, so it's using both sides of the brain. One part is thinking about when to clap. The other part is doing the clapping. It's very, very, very good for us. Very good for the development of so many skills in young people. And actually, we know even adults, believe it or not, can benefit from this in terms of their mental ability and awareness, all those kind of things. So it really is a huge resource. And we would just love anyone who's a teacher to get out there, check it out. And just do 10 minutes, even 10 minutes once a week with your students in your class makes a big difference.
That is so cool. Well, there are all these scientific reasons to support what you're doing. What's the emotional component that really drives you?
Well, I would just say again, it's this idea that I think if we want to bring up a new generation that's rounded, then we want to offer them as many opportunities as possible. You know, I say I don't expect every student I ever come into contact with to go on and do music, but I want them to experience music for two reasons. First of all, so they're aware that it exists and they're aware what the arts are. And second of all, so they can make their own decision. You know, and unless we're offering music in schools at a good level, how do those young people ever know whether it's for them? How do they ever experience that part of themselves? And how can they ever be aware and open to art and culture in the community as they grow up into the next generation unless we've offered them this opportunity?
Right. And I think when you sing, there's something special about singing.
Yeah, I mean, the people say the eyes are the window to the soul, don't they? But I think the voice is, I would say, hearing a voice in its naked, pure form as a cappella is a very, very touching thing. Because, you know, the first thing that we hear when we're born is our mother's voice. You know, the way that we as human beings are wired to interact with the human voice, it's one of the deepest connections we can possibly have, is that perception. And so, of course, a cappella and the unaccompanied voice, or the voice in general, taps into that, and I think that's why it moves people so much. I mean, I'm lucky I get to hear great singing every day, and sometimes I stand out of Voctor's 8 in a rehearsal and I cry. I will literally weep because it's so beautiful, and I'm, you know, desensitized to it because I hear it every day. So I can only imagine what hearing it for the first time or irregularly must be for our audience members.
Wow. Well, thanks so much. Congratulations on the new CD.
Thank you.
And come back to WRTI sometime
soon. We'd love
soon.
To. Thanks very much for having me.